Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. My guest today is Mikalene Orlowski, a fellow registered dietitian based out of Pennsylvania, who is actively involved in the dietetics profession as a leader, mentor, and faculty member. Mickey and I dish about our summers on the New Jersey shore, taking chances in work and life by stepping out of our comfort zones, and how laughter can really be the best medicine sometimes. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Mikalene Orlowski, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to spend with me.
Yeah. Hi, Dina. I'm very excited to be here. I know I've been catching up on some of your podcast episodes, and all of your guests say that they're excited, but I really am excited to kind of dive into these topics with you, and everything's great. It's very warm here. It's 90 degrees. So, you know, kind of sweating out the heat, air conditioner's on full blast, but surviving the heat.
We are definitely feeling the same since you and I are on the East Coast. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. I am so, so grateful for anyone who comes on here and shares their stories. And that brings me to my first question, which is, how did we come to learn and know about each other, if you remember that?
Yeah, probably not a traditional role. We met, I think it was in the Dietitians Who Teach Facebook group, which there's so many dietetics Facebook groups, but I think that's the one. And you put out kind of like a call for podcast guests. And I was like, this podcast sounds awesome. And it's very interesting to me. And I always want to support other RDs. So I was like, sign me up, let's go.
I'm honoring the fact this is 3 years now in the making. We are in recording now episodes for season 6. This became a pandemic podcast when the beginning of the pandemic happened, and we were, maybe some of us were out of a job like I was. A lot of our businesses kind of slowed down or shut down at the time. And I didn't necessarily want to make it like the dietitian show. I wanted to marry my love of food, culinary, cultural backgrounds. The dietetics part, of course, plays a role in it. And then also I have a background in media and communication. So I thought, what better way than to maybe host and talk about things? So I was able to reach out to a lot of people on, like you said, Facebook groups, social media, and I've just gotten such a wide range of people who have such great stories to share. And I think we'll come to see, we have a lot of things in common, but then there's also really interesting directions that people have taken that also just make me feel like I'm so happy that I can provide a channel or a conduit for people to share their stories that might resonate with other people that, you know, I don't have the ability to do that. So thank you again. Tell us a little bit about your origin story of where you grew up, what kind of family environment, any particular food memories, holidays, traditions that you remember.
I grew up in a very small town in Pennsylvania. It's called Old Forge, Pennsylvania. Very Italian. It's actually known to be the pizza capital of the world, quote unquote. And I would have to disagree. And I would probably get hate mail for this. 100%. But I do not like Old Forge pizza. It's very different than normal, like regular pizza. My family is kind of like a mixed bag. We have some Italian, we have Polish, we have Russian, Ukrainian. We're not quite sure what that side of the family is exactly from, so we're just going with Russian, Ukrainian. I mean, as you know, with Italians, very big, loud, lots of food holidays, you know, Christmas in particular, any sort of, you know, holiday was always just a lot of food and a lot of yelling at each other, basically, which we weren't mad at each other. It was just yelling, and everybody has to one up each other when we talk. So I definitely remember a lot of that growing up. But I also, you know, had the privilege of traveling a lot when I was a kid, I think for the most part, you know, more than maybe some other kids get to. And I felt really privileged to do that. My family had a business, so we were able to kind of take off time and do like different experiences. And one of the first memories of food that I have that I can remember is going to Cape May, New Jersey, to the beach with the family and everything. And, I was never the kid that would order from the kids menu. I was not the person that would order chicken tenders and fries or mac and cheese. I had a very curious palate, and I remember always getting like shrimp cocktail or like something that was, you know, appropriate for a child to eat. But then also, like, I don't know if it was like I didn't want to lose or waste food, but I would always eat like the kale garnish That came along with the shrimp cocktail, which I don't know, maybe this prefaced me to be a dietitian because I loved kale so young. And I would always suck on the lemon at the end as well. Like, I just didn't want to waste anything, but I always just had that curiosity as a child and, an open palate, I guess.
Will you share with us when you did the traveling? Was it mostly domestic? Did you go overseas at any time? Work, did you kind of land on a regular place that you would go? And what variety did you have when you were out and about?
We were traveling mostly for family vacations. And I do remember us regularly going to Cape May, New Jersey. I still remember the hotel, Periwinkle Hotel. It was always just a fun time. But eventually, as I got older and a little bit more mature, my parents started to take me to different places. So we went to Niagara Falls. They, of course, took me to Disney World. So that's Florida. And then eventually, we did go on a cruise, which kind of exposed me to a different cuisines as well, but also, just a completely different island living and things like that. So, I got to see like the Cayman Islands and like, the Bahamas and things like that, and Mexico. We did go to Mexico, and I was just like so, excited to do that. And it really, I think, solidified my love for travel.
You are reminding me because as a group, we used to have not just my family, but our what we call our paisans, right? Like our Italian family, friends of family that were all basically from the same region of Italy. And we would go every year to Wildwood. So we're just a little bit north of where you were in Cape May. That was our summer thing. I think we'd take like 2 weeks off every season in July or August, whatever. And just so many of us would pile around. We were always very excited if we had a pool and not just the beach, but also a pool on the premises. That felt like a very high-end amenity that we would have there. And you're bringing back a lot of memories for me right now. Did you enjoy anything specific about the stays at the Periwinkle Hotel when you were in Cape May?
So I just remember, like, I have a very soft spot for Wawa hoagies because that was just like what we had as the beachside or poolside lunch. So, like, things like that, it's funny how you just like tie that memory with the food. And, I think that's one of the reasons why you started this podcast, is just kind of explore that. But yeah, it's crazy how we just tie those things together and like, very specific memories and like you unlock those things. But yeah, I do remember that. And just, I don't know, boardwalk food, who can go wrong with that?
I want to share with you, Mickey, that Periwinkle in Cape May is still open, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So shout out to them. I might link them in the notes here. You mentioned also having kind of an expanded palate as a child, which is somewhat unique. I think a lot of people that I've interviewed in the past have said they've either been picky eaters or maybe for budget purposes, they were not able to have an expanded experience of going out to different restaurants or traveling in that sense, or maybe just they didn't grow up in a household that cooked a lot. So things that they were being presented with were maybe somewhat, simple, bland, whatever the case may be. Will you share with us a little bit about how or if any of those experiences led you to who you are now? Like meandering through the exposure to different foods, trying out different recipes, getting involved in maybe culinary or dietary things, and take us in the direction of from that point where you started becoming independent, high school, college, and then going into the dietetics world.
Yeah, so buckle up. This is going to be a long, long story. 7-part podcast coming up. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so first, I think, the curiosity came out. My family was kind of, like I mentioned, like a melting pot of a variety of different cultures. And my family also married into other cultures as well. So we had a Syrian, I had a Syrian uncle and a Spanish aunt. So I was exposed to, paella and baklava and like kibbeh, which is like raw meat, and just like those types of things. And I was always willing to try them. I remember, being very sensitive to garlic and like just those specific core memories of being exposed to that food. And I was always just interested in it. And I even think, as a kid, I never was a picky eater. I always wanted to try all the foods. And I think I even ended up kind of getting bullied for it a little bit. As a kid, it's not cool to eat the vegetables on the lunch line, right? But I was like, I want to eat the corn. I want to eat the peas. Like, they taste delicious. And, people would be like, ew, why are you eating that? I'm like, because it tastes good. And I never wanted to eat waste food as well. I think that was kind of part of my upbringing. You don't want to waste food. So, and I'm sure you could probably attest to that as well. I think Italians do that. But yeah, lots of different things going on. But I just remember, you know, I always had that curious palate on that cruise that I mentioned too. Like, I even tried escargot as a kid. Like, anything that I could get my hands on, I was like, I want to try that. That sounds cool. Like, that sounds interesting. And I think that kind of did preface me a little bit to kind of move into the dietetics field. I always say, I joke, there's a select few reasons why people get into dietetics. And I think one of them is a love of food. You know, I was very privileged and honored to get into, you know, those trips and everything. But as I grew older, I think I did start to change a little bit. And I realized in order to fit in a little bit more, I would need to change the way I ate. And something else that happened as a kid, my parents ended up getting a divorce. So that drastically changed how I was living and the accessibility of food. I ended up living with my mother, and at the time she was a stay-at-home mom helping with the business, but she actually had to go back to work. So doing that, you know, that changed our budget and, you know, food accessibility and kind of struggling on what to do. Now, my mother never put that out there. She always had food, but to me, I was always kind of like, oh, you know, it's changing a little bit. So more convenient type foods, things like that, things that I could cook as like a middle school, high school student. So I started to kind of change and like go more towards like the hot pocket route or like back to like the 90s lean cuisine, like things like that were just like easy for me to make. But then I think as I got older and more responsible, that also developed. I was like, well, if I have to fend for myself a little bit more, I'm gonna try and cook. So that kind of brought in, you know, the ability to test out kind of recipes and things like that.
You just reminded me in a sad way, kind of about being bullied in school with food. When I think I've mentioned this on a previous episode too, when I would be sent to school with my brown bag lunch, it would usually be last night's, you know, veal cutlet breaded sandwich with like braised escargot. So I would walk into school with, you know, something was a little bit pungent or like oily on the bottom. And I would watch my classmates open up their cute little metal lunch boxes and take out whatever peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, bologna sandwiches. And I remember trading things off because I wanted to be like them. So I would, you know, whatever I had, or if I could ask them, can I have whatever your leftovers are? And so there was a little bit of like, ew, what is that that you're eating? What does it smell so bad? What are you eating there? That doesn't look right. And that just sticks in my head a lot because it was just last night's dinner. Flashing forward now, I'm like, food is food. Who cares if it's last night's dinner or if it's, you know, you're having breakfast for lunch? Like, it doesn't matter. But back then, there almost felt like a pre-approved menu that certain people had to have. Or if you didn't get food at school and you brought your own, again, it had to be, you know, of a certain standard, a more like American type of diet. So I share that with you of, you know, having that kind of weird feeling that kids are like, ew, what are you doing eating that stuff? Where did that switch come when you started moving in the direction? Or were there other things that you did before you became a dietitian? Because I don't know your full background story, like career-wise, or what you majored in.
Yeah, so I had a variety of different interests, and I went back and forth, you know, as trying to figure out as an 18-year-old, like what you're gonna do with your life, right? Like that's the big question. And I remember, you know, I was really involved in a lot of things in school, but sometimes after school, I would come home and like what became my little oasis was the Food Network, and I would watch those channels and kind of, you know, study them and like, I don't know, like just look and see, like, oh, like that's interesting. That's really cool. And I was like, I would love to like be a chef, right? I feel like that's always like when you think of food, you're like, I need to go the chef route. And eventually, you know, I looked into it and I was like, I don't want to have the lifestyle of a chef. Like it's just a lot. Which I've worked in food industries and I worked as a waitress, so I know like that was the right choice for me. It was not always a fun time. But eventually, one of the shows that came on the Food Network was with Ellie Krieger. I'm sure you are familiar with her. And they were saying she's a dietitian. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. But she's has a food show. And I was like, that's pretty cool. So I kind of went into a little bit more, you know, looking into it. And then I thought, let's 180 this and let's look at psychology because why not, right? And I was very torn between the two. And I applied to only two colleges. Again, with my parents' divorce, it was kind of like I needed to pick something local, something I could commute to. So there were two universities in the area, and one of them was Marywood, where I am currently employed, which we will get to that. And the other one was another local school. And I applied to both, and I was like, well, we'll see where I get in and where who offers me the most financial aid, because that's the most important, right? So they both offered me a hefty financial aid package. I was like, well, all right, now I have to actually make a life decision. Like, now I have to decide. The other school did not have any sort of nutrition program. And I was like, well, if I do want to explore this, I'm going to have to go to Marywood. So that was the one I picked. And I went in undeclared in my first year, because I really still wasn't sure. And I took, my liberal arts, and I was like, I just don't think psych is for me. Like, I just don't know if I could handle it. And I later turned out that I'm very empathic. Like, I take a lot of stuff home with me, basically. And I was like, I don't know if I could do that. So dietetics sounded more fun. Now, I did not know, like many students, what that entails afterwards, and nobody tells you what happens after that, right? Like, it's just like, oh, you go to school for 4 years and you're a dietitian. Wrong. You then have to do your internship, and then you do your master's if you want to at the time. Now it's required in 2024. But, I was like, oh, this is a big undertaking. I'm like, okay, but I still love this. This is great. Like, I'll still do it. And then I ended up, doing my 4 years. I didn't end up doing my internship with Marywood. I did it with Cedar Crest College in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And it was lovely. It was community-based because I knew I never wanted to be a clinical dietitian. I wanted to be a community dietitian, or so I thought. And so that's where I, did that. And then, long story short, again, I'm sorry, master's degree later. And here we are. But yeah, lots of stuff to unpack there.
I really do want to unpack a little bit of it if it's okay, because I know a lot of people that listen to this podcast are in the wellness world. Not everybody is credentialed as a dietitian or even wants to be. And I often find that we have a lot of things in common as far as the bits and pieces, like the entities within the overall structure. So you mentioned community versus clinical, and the psychology is what you said you originally were interested in. There are behavioral components to a lot of these things too, especially if we are specializing in something like eating disorders, and in which case then that becomes almost like its own mental health. It does become its own mental health issue that we are not necessarily as dietitians qualified for. So we have to make sure we're also working with therapists or case managers or social workers. And so when it comes to entering into a field, if for anyone who's listening to this doesn't know yet what they want to do, or like I did, change careers and aren't completely aware of what it entails, I highly, highly recommend always, especially now in the world of tech and the fact that, our social media platforms really bring so many people so much closer together, that reach out, try to grow a network and test out the waters. Maybe ask for informational interviews of people who have your desired career, of what it entailed, how they got to where they were, if there are any ways that you might want to go into something that requires you to have a large amount of credentialing and academics. If there's another option and you're unable to do that, whether it's finances or time or whatever, there might be another option that you can do that. You might not be able, obviously, to get the RD, the registered dietitian credential, but you could still potentially work as a health coach or nutritionist, depending on what state and your scope of practice. So there's a lot of things that are kind of within that. So I wanted to just validate what you just said, Mickey, because like you, I didn't go in as a first timer. I came in as a second careerer. So it was, 20 years after my first degree, and I had a BA in communication, and I ended up with an MS in nutrition. And it was just like learning a whole new language. I keep saying this. It feels like we committed to pre-med practically with all the things that we have to learn. And at the time in my mid-40s, I was not prepared for how much I had to undergo, especially when it came to that internship, because I ended up with a school, much like you. I kind of landed in one spot and kind of stayed in there for a while. So I was at CUNY Lehman College. I did my second degree undergrad there, which migrated. I kind of like switched loyalties and migrated into their grad program because they accepted me into their internship. And that was at the time, and still is, it's a combined program. So I was going, 9 to 5 Monday through Friday-ish doing all of those rotations for my, again, at the time, I think it's still the same now, 1200 hours, which is a year's worth of interning and going to campus at 6 o'clock at night to take, you know, whatever, 3 to 6 credits worth of graduate studies every semester. And those teach, and I'm, by the way, I am a teacher now in undergrad and graduate at that same school. We don't care if you're an intern, if you have a full-time job, like homework is homework, deadlines are deadlines. So it was quite an undertaking. So I definitely appreciate your experience. And also, you know, we can't stress this enough. A lot of times people just don't know going in the questions to ask. And sometimes the people who are the powers that be in the school don't necessarily explain it in a way that helps people, you know, foreshadow or plan for the future them. They think like you did, right? 4 years in and out, right? That's it. I get my degree and I'm gone. No, there's also this attached to it. And also now, like you said, we are mandated to have the master's degree, which can be pricey. There's not financial aid for things like that, or, you know, loans might have to be taken out, and the time spent in attaching that onto your career pursuits. So yeah, it's quite an undertaking. Not to talk anybody out of it, because we really need more in this field than less, but just be prepared that there might be some shifting around of things. I had to kind of make peace with giving up a lot of my own time, and thank goodness I had a huge support system that helped me with all that stuff as far as finances and taking up, you know, responsibilities that I could no longer do. My boyfriend picked up the slack with a lot of things that I had to let go. Did you feel supported in all that too? Did people even know what a dietitian was when you were explaining to them your major?
I very much avoided explaining what a dietitian was to my family, and when I would, they were kind of like, is there money in that? Like, that was always the question, is there money in that? I'm like, I don't know, but don't you want me to be happy? Like, don't you want me to, you know, find success in other ways that's not necessarily money? And I remember, like, family members were like, well, why don't you go into, like, law enforcement? I'm like, there's no money in that, and I'm not risking my life for anybody. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I know that sounds selfish, and I'm grateful for, like, people who put their lives on the line for people, but I'm not that person. And I was like, I don't know. I just want to enjoy my career. So I would explain, you know, I think the biggest way to kind of get the importance of dietitians out there was, I would always refer back to like tube feedings. I'd be like, who do you think calculates that? And they're like, well, I don't know. I thought they just put it in a bag. And like, you know, I was like, oh no, somebody has to figure that out. And that's part of my job. And, you know, I would explain like, oh, I'm taking like a marketing class. And they're like, why do you need marketing? And I'm like, well, because, you know, it's not just so simple. It's not a simple, like path to go down. And there's so many areas that you can discover and go through. And like you said, we're pre-med kind of, we're scientists, we're psychologists, we're teachers. Like, there's so many other like nuances to our profession that people just don't understand. And what I just want to say is I appreciate, you know, having podcasts like this that do increase visibility of all of these professions, because even if it's not just a dietitian route you want to go towards, but you still want to look at food or health or wellness, you know, there might be another exposure to a different career. So that's why I appreciate this, and kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to get involved, because that's one of like my core values is like, let's increase visibility of dietitians and, you know, put out there that it's not this terrifying thing. And, you know, it's a very rewarding career, and there's definitely, you know, different areas you can go into. And if you get bored, you can go someplace else. And there's plenty of jobs out there right now. So it's definitely like a field that is worth getting into, but just kind of increasing like the value and visibility of dietitians and any healthcare, you know, professional is important.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think I end every sentence with everyone I talk to, have you ever been referred to a dietitian? No. Do you know what a dietitian is? No. Let me explain and advocate for that value and create partnerships in that. And so you mentioned the marketing aspect. Not every curriculum has some business components to it, or again, helping people formulate their career development of how to move forward, or maybe even just the marketing of how do we create handouts and patient education materials. And so when you saw yourself going in that direction of more, or at least feeling more comfortable in a community setting versus something like a true inpatient clinical, like a hospital, or maybe even a nursing home, what did you end up doing? What was your first job out of the gate? And then tell us a little bit about what a current week in the life of you is.
Sure. Again, buckle up. It's a story, I'll tell you. So in my internship, I did find that I was not meant for clinical. It just was not something that I was meant to do. And I'm very grateful for those dietitians that are in that field for sure. I like I had mentioned before, I took a lot of it home. I was like, this isn't making me happy. So when I found out that I was like more interested in community, I really was interested in like educating and developing relationships and working with a variety of populations. So what that led me to was actually while I was getting my master's at Marywood, a local food bank has also a nonprofit organization attached to it called Commission on Economic Opportunity near me, and they had a variety of nutrition educators, and you know they do nutrition education in a variety of settings, and I was like, I want to do that. And one of my friends at the time was working there, and she's like, well, there's a part-time position open if you're interested. And what was nice about the position, it was 10 to 6, and I will confess, I am not a morning person. So that sounded wonderful to me because I was like, oh, I don't have to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to go to work. Perfect. Awesome. So that sounded wonderful to me. And then, you know, as I mentioned, I was still working at a restaurant at the time and doing my master's. So it was kind of getting all of that together. And then I ended up getting that position. And they kind of made a full-time position. Somebody had left and they were like, would you like that position? And I was like, absolutely, I would love that. And I was out in the community doing education in food pantries and senior centers, and I loved it. I was like a pig in crap. Like, I just loved it. Like, I loved talking to people. We would do food demos, and just like, I really liked developing the relationships with people. But I was curious of trying to find other growth opportunities. And I did end up leaving to go to a long-term care that housed people with mental disabilities. And it was a contract position, but it gave me a little bit more money, which I was looking to kind of move out of the waitressing fields. So I was like, you know, I'm going to explore this. So I left and I went there and I absolutely hated it again because I am that person that takes it all home. I was like, I can't, like, I just want to help all these people and I like, there's only so much I can do. So I was miserable and I left shortly after that. But what was nice is another position opened up at CEO, and it was for a school age nutrition education like manager position. So I went from adult nutrition education, and I was like, well, I'd love to come back. And I was in the schools, and I would teach kindergarten, first, second, all the way up to sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth grade, which is very hard. I think kindergarten is hard, but also ninth graders are very hard for very different reasons. But I loved it. I loved being a part of that and just educating children on it. And it was just a really great opportunity. And I also got to manage, you know, the rest of my colleagues who I had a wonderful team there, and I love them still to this day. I'm friends with most of them. I really thought that was going to be the end all be all job for me. I really did. And I also took students as a preceptor. And I loved precepting and I loved mentoring students. And I found that Marywood was opening a clinical coordinator position.
One of the themes that tends to come up a lot in these episodes is fearlessness, right? The ability to be open to doing something else. I've really encouraged people that if you feel confined by something, if you feel like something's no longer serving you, if you feel like you're not getting to where you need to go, or you haven't set boundaries, maybe, and people are crossing them, and you're coming home and just like hating life with whatever you're doing, whatever relationship you're in. But in this particular case, we're talking career pursuits, that please keep your eyes open, allow yourself. There might be a little learning curve, you know, it might be a little bit of up ramping necessary, but I really want to encourage everybody and advocate for if you feel like something is no longer the right fit, open your eyes and try to pursue something else or be open to things that maybe you weren't necessarily open to, which I think is what you're about to get into, right? Like we think of speaking to our strengths and something that I've brought up in the past too, where I didn't think I'd ever work with children or the older population or pregnant people. And I worked for 4 years in high risk OBGYN. So I was like, you know, I had a very specific population and I was like, hey, look at me sitting here with, you know, prenatal and gestational diabetes. Who knew? So I can't wait to hear where this ended up taking you, Mickey.
Yeah, I think something that you touched on that I would like to kind of circle back to is, I think for dietitians, maybe specifically, is we're always told you have to go into clinical and get that clinical experience right before. You don't need to do that. I didn't do it, and I'm in a completely different position from where I am, and I just knew it wasn't going to fulfill me or make me happy as a person. So, you know, you do not have to do that if that's not your calling. If it is, wonderful, do it. And if you really do want that experience, go for it. I'm not saying don't take those jobs. But for me, that wasn't the path that I wanted to take. And I'm very grateful that I didn't, because I don't know if I would have gotten the opportunities that I would have otherwise. And so kind of getting into the Marywood aspect, you know, the position opened up and I was like, well, I love precepting and I love mentoring students and I love kind of seeing them take what they're passionate about and going with it. So I was like, it can't hurt to apply. You know, if they say no, they say no, and that's fine. I'm happy where I am. And that was something that I really want to emphasize. I wasn't really like actively looking for a job. It was just kind of like this opportunity came up and, you know, I applied for it. I'm sure you stress this to your students, you know, if you feel like you're not qualified for something, nobody's qualified 100% for everything, right? So if you feel like you are suited for that position, what's the worst they can say is no. So I applied and lo and behold, I got the position. And, you know, I really like wanted to work with interns. And, you know, I think my passion for that and my love for Marywood at the time really kind of shine through and made me the best candidate. And now kind of I'm 4 years into it and loving it. There's definitely been challenges because the pandemic happened like that first year that I started. So like no year has been consistent. We've had variety of changes to like internship standards and things like that. I recently had a colleague leave. So that's kind of what put me in the now interim director position, is kind of moving into that role. But I love it. I love working with students. It's definitely a challenge. The work is never done. So you have to kind of get used to that if you want to get into education. Like the work is never done. You are never going to feel like, okay, I have nothing to do tomorrow, because you always have something to do. But it's always a challenge. There's always something new. And I don't know, I just really love it. I love working there. I love the students. I have 30 right now that are from a variety of different places. Some are local and some I have in Hawaii, California, Nevada, like all these different places. So it's really cool to get to meet them as well. And I just love seeing them grow.
Yeah. I want to speak on the professional development part for a second, because this is often where when I precept or I mentor, and I also discuss with my students too, when we talk about, do you see your future in a job or a career? And let's define that, right? A job would be maybe something somewhat passive. I go, I get my paycheck and I get the heck out of there and I don't think anything about it. Having a career, and in the case of dietetics, and I'm assuming a lot of similar professions like ours, where we are mandated within our scope of practice to maintain certain credentials or certain continuing education units after that, it really allows us the opportunity to continue to grow and stay current with that, you know, to be able to network, but then also find different research articles and maybe specialize in things. And this brings me to the question about niching and marketing our path. When I'll never forget, I won't call her out, but I'll never forget one of my professors saying, oh, you don't have to specialize in anything. And I really encourage people, no, like try to maybe hone in on something specific, because dietetics is such a broad field. And I'm sure a lot of professions are like that too. So if you're choosing maybe a locale or a patient population age range or a particular chronic condition, or maybe you're moving more in the direction of integrating your practice with becoming a yoga instructor or, you know, a personal trainer, or in going into elite sports and athletes, something like that, you're a desirable candidate. Like you can really spin that. And there are probably fewer people available who would apply to something versus being thrown into a much broader clinical political or community position. And maybe you could even pitch something too, that somebody doesn't have something available, but you notice a need for something like that. Where, because you now are working with students and interns, obviously, where would you see that? Do you also encourage people to maybe focus in a little bit on what they feel most comfortable with, even though I know we can apply our skills across the board? What are your thoughts on that, Mickey?
Yeah, that is a very good point. And yes, I do encourage students to kind of look for something that they feel passionate about and like something that they have a genuine interest in. Because, right, you don't want to work in something that you don't always feel curious about. And at Marywood, we do have a sports and human performance nutrition pathway. So we get a lot of sports nutrition students. So that's like one pathway that they want to go towards. I have a lot of students that start private practices right out the gate, which is wonderful. And I've seen some of them go the eating disorder route. Some of them go like the hormonal route, which is very up and coming right now, which I think is wonderful. I see a lot of students' mental health kind of going with nutrition and kind of almost like neurodivergencies. So maybe like ADHD, things like that. That's kind of up and coming right now. And I see a need for that. And I encourage students to kind of explore that if they want. Some of them want to get into maternal family health or like lactation consultants. So there's a variety of paths that they definitely can go down. And what's nice about like our internship is like you are encouraged to explore that, like you can go and get that experience if you'd like to, which I think the students appreciate, because then they're like, oh, that definitely wasn't for me, never mind. Like they might almost like romanticize this pathway, and then they do some experience in it and they're like, oh, never mind, I don't want to do that. Like, that's too much work, or that's like really hard, or that's not what I thought it was going to be, or anything like that. But at least you can get that exposure prior to. So yeah, definitely.
I appreciate your insight on that. So let's talk a little bit too about personal stuff, because a current week in the life of you, as far as work is concerned, you gave us a little bit of a taste of that. But what about things that you maybe consider for yourself, non-negotiables, your own healthy habits? Because, you know, we like to lead and live by example, but sometimes we do not. So what are some things that are you're trying to make sure that you maintain for yourself to keep yourself up and going and in your potentially optimal, you know, health range?
Yeah. So in education, as you can imagine, it's not a normal 9-to-5 job by any means. And that's okay with me, but that does require me to set more hefty boundaries in terms of like when I turn off my phone, when I check my emails. It's always a work in progress. I can't say like I have it nailed down to a science, but something I do make a strong effort to do is not do any work on the weekends. And, if I have the ability to do that. So even if I get a text from a colleague or emails or whatever, I try and, say it can wait till Monday. There's no emergency that is probably needed, needs me, I guess, before Monday. I do try and make sure I take, my time off, take advantage of breaks, and then just also like, your normal self-care type stuff, like making sure that I'm eating. I have a dog and he keeps me sane. I swear he relieves all my anxiety. So like just kind of things like that. And, traveling is like something, again, kind of circling back to the beginning, like I love to travel. So like making time for that, because that kind of feeds my soul a little bit. And just, making sure that I don't feel as stressed as I could. I'm a big, advocate for mental health. So, I kind of take that very seriously and try and make sure that I'm taking care of my mental health and getting help if I need it or support. And luckily, I do have a very supportive partner. I have a very supportive family. So that's always, a plus if you have that support.
Absolutely. Will you share with us too, with so many things that you juggle, because I love talking about productivity tools, like I'm a huge nerd when it comes to things like this. Are you more of an analog, a digital, a combination of both? Like, how do you keep track of all the stuff, all of the moving parts that you have going on?
That is a very good question. It again, a work in progress. When I was a student, I wrote down everything. The problem with that is I have terrible handwriting. So even if I wrote it, I would require my memory to remember it because I wouldn't be able to read what I wrote. Now I'm more, I keep it all in like my work calendar and even like personal appointments, things like that. I just keep it all there in one spot, and then I use my email as like a to-do list. So if it's in my inbox, it needs to be done. And then I move everything to files. So that's something else that that seems to work well for me. And then I do keep like dietitians love a to-do list and planners. So I definitely have a variety of to-do lists and things that I want to check off and, you know, feel that little accomplishment, like that surge of, I don't know, dopamine that you get when you check something off. So those are the things that I do try and do. I mean, not to get too personal, but I was recently and in my adulthood diagnosed with ADHD, which is another reason why I'm a proponent of that. And kind of figuring out, oh, that's not something normal. Like, oh, your brain's not supposed to do that has really helped me kind of discover, oh, so my brain doesn't function like everybody's. So I need to figure out what works best for me rather than what seems to work best for everybody else.
I will continue having this discussion because I too am neurodivergent and I am hard pressed to find someone who is not. Like, what is the quote unquote normal or typical brain? Because I don't believe it exists. I think that that is the minority and the rest of us are walking around like I did yesterday. I took out my contact lenses. Like, I have new contacts that I had just purchased and I took out two of them to put into my eyes, and then immediately was like, oh, wait, that reminds me. And then I went over here and I did something else. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, that reminds me. And then I went back to something else. And within about 15 minutes, my boyfriend comes over. He's like, babe, are you still like doing something in the bathroom? There's like contact lenses out. I'm like, oh, right. I forgot what that first thing that I was doing because I got so far removed, so sidetracked. So I think I want to encourage everybody to find your unique needs, right? We watch a lot of maybe YouTube videos, or we listen to people saying, you know, I get up at 5 in the morning and my routine is this. You really have to find out what works for you. I am a morning person, but I don't love starting things until at least 10. So, like you, Mickey, I don't like, you know, hey, let's get there at 7 in the morning or this workout class starts at 8. I'm like, no, thank you. But I know how my life is, and I've you know, and it's come to be that way over decades of trial and error. So you just mentioned a work in progress. I think it ebbs and flows. I think that the chapters of our lives change direction. A lot of times what worked for us 20 years ago isn't working for us now. Also, our physical and mental health might change too, some things that we might have to prioritize a little bit more now versus then, or later in life versus now. So, you know, allow yourself the flexibility to just find what works for you. Don't feel like you have to copy someone else's way of doing things, whatever the routine is. Meditation, I tried it. It's not going to work. I mean, I can get like a guided thing going, but there's no way I can shut my brain off. There is a constant monologue 24/7. So for anybody who is like that, I feel for you. I really do. Mickey, I'm watching my time here with us, and I want to find out a couple of things before we officially start wrapping up. So the first one is, in my guest contact forms, I always ask everybody, my guests, to provide me with a couple of descriptors. So you shared with us a little bit about the educating and the leadership roles that you play, but you also mentioned you called yourself a comedian. Will you dive a little deeper in there? Because I'm curious to see why that is something that you've labeled yourself as.
Yeah, so I am a improv and stand-up comedian. I am very new to it, so I am not like a seasoned comedian, but I have performed in a variety of settings, including over Zoom during the pandemic. And something I didn't mention is, you know, with mental health and things like that, always find a hobby that you like. And I think that's been one of my consistencies is like finding new hobbies and trying them out. And I was in a little bit of a rut in I think 2018 or 2019, and someone invited me, another dietitian actually invited me to an improv class, and I was like, that sounds fun. I'm going to try that. And I absolutely fell in love with it. The community was so supportive and welcoming. And the group that I work with is called Scranton Improv and Comedy. And, you know, I just loved improv. And what's nice about improv, it also kind of gives you, you know, tools for professional life, which is nice, like, you know, problem solving and listening and saying yes and all of these other things. So I highly recommend people to take an improv class at least once in your life if you're feeling brave. So I did it and I loved it. And I, you know, did a few jams and, you know, trainings and classes and just kind of tried to like massage that out a little bit. And I've always been a writer. Like I do like to type and write and tell stories. And I've always kind of had my own like quips and things like that. So when the pandemic happened, we started to do virtual like stand-up classes and like writing and like kind of doing like group work almost. And I just found like this love of like writing, but also learning like, oh, there's so much more that goes into stand-up comedy than just getting up on stage and just like bearing out your soul, which you do do. But you do have to write and massage and get feedback and like think of all of the things that could possibly, you know, be in a situation to make it funny, because, you know, you want to obviously make it the most funny you possibly can. And I loved it. And I have a wonderful, wonderful comedian mentor, and she gave me all of these wonderful like tidbits and really helped me out. And I did some performing over Zoom, and then I kind of started to move to the stage a little bit. And so these past couple months I've been doing some stand-up comedy, and it's just really a really good time, and I'm really glad I found it, because it just, it also helps me kind of get a message out, you know, or just tell my stories, or I don't know, just it connects people. And that laughter is definitely like a high, like you just like you always want to chase it, and I think that's like one of the best feelings in the world, is to make people laugh.
Oh my gosh, I am so, we've only just met today, but I am so proud of you for taking that chance. Were you a theater kid at all? Like, were you into entertainment at all as a child?
So when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be an actress. That did not happen. I was a dancer, and I did play piano. I played a variety of musical instruments, which is, again, part of my ADHD brain. But yeah, I was in a few like high school plays, and like I did some singing and things like that. So I definitely always had like that entertainer gene in my body, which I think almost, again, helps almost as an educator, because again, you're performing in front of an audience basically. So I think that's kind of what, you know, kind of helped me kind of get into that realm. But then I was like, comedy is just so cool, and like I just was like, let's try it out and see how it works out. And I really love it. So I'm looking forward to getting to do more comedy for sure. And if you're ever in, you know, the area, you know, I will definitely let you know, so that way you can come see me.
Your list of tour dates will appear on your website at some point. I love that. You are reminding me of a couple of things. I'm a funny person just by nature, but as I you mentioned before about some of your students going right into private practice. That's what I did. I went right into working for myself. But there were a few years there that even though I called myself an entrepreneur, I really was basically just cobbling together 7 part-time jobs, I think, at the time, because I was being contracted as an independent consultant to a variety of different things. Anyway, my point is that in the private practice world that I'm slowly trying to transition into, I'm recognizing that I don't have an audience, right? I'm not working with people like my coworkers used to be my audience. I could get, you know, go out to lunch with them, and we'd be like telling jokes, and they're like, you're so funny. And I don't really have that. It's kind of a little bit of a lonely environment being an entrepreneur or being a private practitioner. So I love that you have encouraged maybe people, me and people like me, that if we feel a little bit more isolated, to find that hobby, whether it's dance or a class of some sort, or even you brought to mind Toastmasters, right? Like public speaking, something that you can get feedback, joining. We have a couple of different things here that I think are national, like meetups and Eventbrite and Internations, right? Where they have maybe people who love speaking French or speaking Spanish or going to certain movies and, you know, book clubs. And so allowing yourself an outside creative outlet like that to not just add on to be a well-rounded human, but especially if you might feel a little bit more isolated and you're dealing with mental health issues too, that could make it feel like you're going down that hole a little further, that, you know, venturing out and doing that. Yeah, you just brought to mind. I mean, I think I remember a long, long time ago, my friend Amy, I don't think she listens to this, but my friend Amy and I used to hang out religiously, like every Monday through Thursday or something. And our friends would be like, you guys are so funny. You should do stand up. And I remember saying, what are we going to do? Get up and go, hey, remember that time when Frank said that thing? And then we would both laugh. Like no one else in the audience would know what we're talking about. And so what you mentioned about having stories, maybe even capturing anecdotes and maybe making it a little bit more formalized, you know, whether it's a journal or a blog of, you know, having an outlet in some way. You're really getting the juices flowing here. So I hope that also hit a chord or struck a chord with anyone who might be listening to this. Mickey, is there anything that we didn't cover that I didn't ask you that you didn't share that you want to share before we officially wrap up and I ask my final two questions?
I could talk to you for hours, but
hours.
I wanted to mention something that you just kind of circled, and I kind of want to get into it just a little bit. In terms of comedy too, it also helps observational skills, which really does help, you know, kind of your professional career as well. A lot of the stories that you get, you have to observe things, right? So like having like notes app on your phone or a journal or something is really helpful to kind of get those stories. So it becomes, you know, a habit to observe things that are a little bit funny and how you can elaborate on them. So I just wanted to touch base on that too. Like that observational skill is super helpful. I recently had my interns do an orientation, and I did kind of at the end of it, like a superlative ceremony, you know, kind of like most likely to. And I did that all based off of my observations, based off of them in that week. So, you know, things like that can really elevate, you know, different aspects of your career as well, or even just personal lives.
But I think that is fantastic because we can get quite myopic sometimes, or I joke about this a lot, but it's not really a joke. I live in New York City. You would think I would be in awe of everything when I walk around, but no, I'm out of the subway, off to this, down the subway, into something else. It is by force that I have to remember, stop for a minute and take a look around you, you know, observe things, look up in the sky, watch a conversation that's going on, check out that cute little puppy or whatever it is. And it does, it forces you to be quite mindful in that moment. So thank you for that reminder. You were about to say something, I think.
Oh, and I was just going to say, I think you touched on it a little bit in this episode about fearlessness, and I would have to agree. I think that was kind of the theme of this a little bit, like curiosity and fearlessness, and just kind of making sure that you take the time to, you know, explore your curiosities and take risks and get involved with things. I know we briefly touched on, you know, leadership, but, you know, I'm the past president of the Pennsylvania Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. And, you know, again, that was somebody reaching out to me and saying, hey, do you want to do this? And I was like, no time like the present, like, sure, why not? Like, did I feel like I was ready? Was there some imposter syndrome? Absolutely. Like, I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. I'm pretty young in my career, I'd say. So to have someone be like, hey, you should do this, I was like, okay, like, if nobody else wants to step up, sure, I'll do it. And it was probably one of the best decisions I made. You know, I met so many wonderful humans in my state and just, you know, across the United States. And I don't know. I really like to encourage people to take those opportunities and those risks, because you never know what they're going to lead to. And you might feel self-conscious or not confident in what you want to do. And there's no shame in that. And, you know, if people are going to judge you, that's their problem, not your problem. So just take the risk.
Absolutely appreciate this, because you know, we talked a little bit about boundary setting, and there's definitely a time that you say no to things, no to people, no to yourself. If you feel like you're spreading yourself too thin or juggling too many things, or you need to change direction, or, you know, close your screens at the end of the night, there's definitely boundary settings. But then I also think there is such joy in taking those chances and moving on. And this is also to speak to a lot of the students that we are working with, especially the ones coming in fresh as undergrads, who are so focused on taking 21 credits a semester and plugging through and getting done as fast as possible that they've left no room to grow outside of their academics, right? To join clubs or network or go to events or do things that might be asked of them that are somewhat tangential, if that's the right word. And if it aligns with what you think you're going to be getting in the future, if that's going to be a path, or maybe it takes you outside of your comfort zone and you're allowing for that, you're leaving space for that, why not do it? Because again, you're becoming a more desirable, more well-rounded human, and a more desirable, well-rounded candidate for things that you might want to do in the future, whether it's applying to grad programs, internships, job opportunities, promotions, etc. We love the fact that you're striving for a 4.0 GPA, but that can't be it. There has to be more to your life than that. So I really encourage everybody, and I continue telling this to my class, my students as well, I recognize that you don't have a lot of time, and whatever's happening at home life, you know, maybe you are in charge of your environment or children or an elder person in your home. Okay, fine. But you still have to make sure that you are applying yourself in a broader sense than just the grades. It has to be a little bit broader than that. So I really love what you just said of stepping outside and taking those chances. So Mickey, this brings me to my final question, which is, what is on your plate today, both figuratively, as in when we wrap up here, what's the next thing that you're going to do, and whether it's personal or professional, and then what is your next meal?
Oh, wow. That is a good question. All right. So what's on my plate today? So after this, I do have a call actually with the accreditation, I guess, people for my state. I had a question about admissions. So as I'm the new program director, I'm trying to figure out things. So they're like my number one resource right now. And then after that, I have a call with a prospective student. And then I have lots of emails and fun things to get to, of course, and different projects and things like that. And then later on today, my best friend and I, she's actually due to have a baby on Monday. So we are getting pedicures today for like our final little outing before, you know, this will be her second, so it'll be fun. And she's getting induced, so it'll be a good time to kind of spend some time together and relax before that happens. So yeah, that's like my big plans for tonight. And as far as eating, so lunch would be my next meal, and I think it's going to be some leftovers. So I have a big coffee next to me that I'll finish. And then I have some chicken and some rice and some veggies. So not anything super, super exciting. But you know, usually I have more exciting lunches and dinners. I get a pretty well-known meal kit that helps me also kind of meal plan and things like that. But this week I didn't get it. I skipped it. So nothing exciting. But yeah, so that's what's on my plate. I love that question.
I love that question too, because it's, first of all, it helps us understand not everybody plans their meals ahead of time. Number two, like you just said, with the leftovers, I'm a huge fan of every couple of days or so, just emptying out what's in my fridge and putting it in a bowl. So it doesn't have to be fancy. You don't have to start from scratch. It doesn't have to be time consuming. It could be grab and go foods, heat and eat items, whatever, right? Nourishment is nourishment. Fun stuff is fun stuff. And then it also maybe entices or inspires somebody to go, oh, you know what? That sounds good. Maybe I should go get chicken and rice and do that later on tonight. So I love that question. And I love that it's a pun intended question too. Mickey, it's been a real pleasure getting to know you and have you share your story. Like you said, this probably could have been a 7-hour, 7-part discussion, and I'm sure at some point we will loop back around. My goal in the near future is to do 2-parters or have like a panel conversation with people and bring people either of like minds in to, you know, have like a theme or a topic. So we'll see how that goes. But thank you for spending so much time with me. And I really hope you enjoyed the experience and got to share your story and that it resonates with people out there.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Like I said, I could talk to you for probably hours. And, you know, I just really appreciate the work that you're doing. And, you know, keep it up. I'm willing to support you in any way I can. So, you know, you're doing an awesome job and you're really helping increase that visibility. And you took a risk. And again, theme of the episode is take that risk. And I'm sure it's paying off in the long run. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And thank you for having me.
Likewise. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments,
feedback. And if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.